Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Author of Object of My Affection, Stephen McCauley's new novel, My Ex-Life, is about a formerly married couple who haven't seen each other in decades. The novel introduces us to David, who has spent the last 20 years as a gay man who helped spoiled San Francisco teens get into colleges. And we also meet Julie, a now twice-divorced mom who has become a middle-aged pothead in order to get by. She's turned her falling-apart house into a B&B. Over the course of the story, we find out what happens when they find themselves living together again. The name of the new novel is My Ex-Life, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Stephen McCauley to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thanks for having me on, Joe.
What brought you to this idea of exes getting back in some way or another?
Yeah, you know, I think I've always been kind of charmed by the idea of people who were previously together getting back again at another point in their lives, because I think it has both continuity and familiarity, which are important to me, and also the appeal of a new context, which adds a little excitement and difference. In this case, it remains a love story, but obviously, given the circumstances, it's not one that's going to end in a happy marriage. So these people have to find what was good in their relationship, and which is the friendship and the closeness that they once had, and put it in a new context.
So bring us to the point where just before they get back together. Tell us a little bit about David Hedges. He had a failed marriage, then he was left by his boyfriend. Where do we find him at the beginning of the novel?
He and Julie are both at a point of kind of crisis. You know, it's a moment when he's discovered that the house that he's been renting in San Francisco, which is probably the hottest real estate market in the country right now, maybe New York is, you know, close there with it, but he's about to lose the place he's been renting, and he has to find a new place to live, and he's a little bit frustrated also with his job helping spoiled kids get into the college that their parents think that they should get into. So he's sort of at a turning point in his life, and he gets a message from Julie saying, you know, would you help my daughter write her college essays? And he flies east and they reconnect.
And that call comes out of the blue.
Yeah, it's a big surprise to him. He's wanted to be in touch with her. He's looked her up online and been curious about her. But in his mind, she now has a happy life. And he's pleased with that because he was afraid that their first marriage was kind of set her on a path of bad luck. And so he thinks that everything is going well in her life and maybe it's best to just leave it at that.
And he keeps track. I mean, he's keeping track of how that marriage is going from afar.
Yeah, from afar. You know, hears from people that they know in common, but never quite gets it together to call her up.
So when you have these two characters meet, it is, I would think there's a challenge because they reconnect in a way, but you're also connecting us to them for the first time, even though they have been together before. What is the challenge of writing that?
I think the challenge of writing it was not getting too much into the past. It was keeping the action focused on the present and on what their current relationship is. Because when you begin filling in backstory about characters, at least as a reader, I find that my attention drifts a little bit. So the challenge was to keep it in the present, focused on what's going on in their lives right now, but at the same time build in some of the intimacy and the importance that they had to each other 30 years ago.
I'm hoping you can read a little bit from the novel from the beginning of the book, I believe.
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
I'm going to read a sort of abbreviated version of the very first chapter. No, it was not the happiest moment of David Hedges' life. Soren, his partner of 5 years, had left him. He'd gotten fat, and somewhere in the midst of that, he'd woken up one day and realized he was no longer in his 20s or his 40s. The last person he expected to hear from was Julie Fisk. He and Julie had a history, albeit an ancient and complicated one. They hadn't seen each other in almost 30 years, hadn't spoken in more than 20, and David assumed that their story, like a few other things in his life, his desire to visit Petra, his vow to study the piano, his sexual relevance, had ended. This didn't diminish her importance to him. In his mind, they were still best friends. He heard of Julie infrequently through a few mutual friends and an occasional late-night computer perusal when he was feeling maudlin. Oh, Julie. Over the years, David had thought of trying to see her when he went east to visit family, but he'd never followed through. Having moved as far away as the continent would allow, it seemed easiest to leave 3,000 miles between them. The period of life they'd shared was his ex-life, and he was resigned to leave it at that. And then one day, during that season of his aggrieved discontent, he received a phone call from Julie Fisk that changed everything.
Stephen McCauley reading from the new novel, My Ex-Life, published by Flatiron Books. Tell us about Mandy.
Mandy is Julie's 17-year-old daughter from her second marriage. She has no connection to David. She has the great misfortune of having been named after a Barry Manilow song, which is a humiliation for which she will never forgive her parents. And she also is at a pivotal point in her life. Her parents are getting divorced, and she begins making a lot of bad decisions about people. She's a shy person. She feels like she's an outsider, that she doesn't connect with a lot of her peers, and she is shown some attention by a 29-year-old man who works at the school as a computer repair person, and she gets a little bit involved in something that could potentially be dangerous.
This idea of an ex-life, what does that mean to you, and what did it mean to you in writing the novel? I mean, had you fully fleshed that out when you started to write?
Not really. You know, once I had the title for the book, which was maybe when I was about 100 pages into it, then that theme cohered around the title, really. You know, for me, I think you get to a certain point, which is the point I'm at in life, you know, and you kind of look in the rearview mirror and you see these ex-lives piling up behind you. And that involves a job that you thought was a lifelong career, a city you thought you would live in forever, a relationship that you thought would be yours until, you know, death, perhaps. And those things change in ways that you don't expect. There's a line in the book, one character observes that all couples start off as Romeo and Juliet and end up as Laurel and Hardy, meaning that relationships change in ways you can't anticipate. And instead of doing something about it, you kind of create a comedy routine about it that you perform at cocktail parties and Thanksgiving dinners and that sort of thing. And the question of the novel is, you know, do you find happiness by continuing on the road ahead? Is there something great waiting for the road on the road ahead of you? Or do you reconceive and reconstruct some portion of your ex-life to create a happy situation for yourself?
It is a very funny novel, and it's so beautifully written because it comes off as very comfortable and very almost breezy. Mm. But obviously that talk about the craft of bringing that tone to it.
Well, my previous novel was published 8 years ago, so, you know, I didn't exactly...
You've had some time?
I've had a little time to kind of think about things. I wrote this novel a little differently than I've written my other novels, which is that I wrote it completely out of sequence. I write longhand in notebooks, and rather than going, you know, point A to point B to point C, I just, on any given day, thought, I'm just going to write whatever scene I think would be fun to write today, between these two characters or from whichever one's point of view I wanted to deal with on that given day. And then at the end, I had, you know, a huge pile of scenes that were not necessarily in any order, and I kind of constructed the narrative out of that. So my hope is that it comes off as fairly seamless, but the writing process was anything but.
From an outsider looking in, it doesn't seem like that's the easiest way to write a novel.
You know, it actually was a really liberating, great way to write for me in that moment. I got a MFA at Columbia back in the 80s, and one of my teachers was the novelist Richard Price, who wrote Clockers,
sure.
And, you know, just a sensational writer. And he said in class, this is one way to write a novel, write a list of scenes and choose which one you want to write and go with it. And I always wanted to do that, but was never able to. I was too kind of compulsive about, you know, following the novel through in a linear way. And being able to write it this way was actually enormously liberating for me.
In that liberation, did you find yourself trying things that you'd never tried before?
I found myself worrying less about the meaning of each scene so that I could just write something that pleased me, that interested me, and knowing that I could just kind of throw it out because it wasn't, it was a piece in a puzzle, but I didn't have the order of it yet.
I mentioned that it's a very funny novel. I always worry when I say that to an author that they'll think, "Oh, I didn't mean it to be," or that I, you know, that. But I assume
I usually worry about the opposite, that I intend it to be funny and people won't find it.
But you intended it to be funny.
Yes. Yeah.
What are the challenges in writing humor? I've heard this described many different ways. One of which is that it's funny the first time, and then after about the 28th draft, you know, you have to find it still being funny to you.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure that I ever find it funny when I'm writing it, so I don't have that problem, you know, that the humor wears out. I mean, for me, the challenge of writing humor is, A, that I don't want it to get too cartoony. I want it to have a certain, you know, truthfulness to it. And the other challenge is keeping it honest. Because I feel that if I write a line that I think is very funny, but it just doesn't resonate with my observations of life and behavior and relationships, then to me it falls flat.
Stephen McCauley is our guest on the book show. The name of the novel is My Ex-Life. It is published by Flatiron Books. When it comes to David and Julie and their relationship, as you say, we all pretty much know from the beginning that they're not going to get back together, right? So what do you want to set us up for?
I really loved these characters. You know, I came to care about them deeply, and I guess that's what I wanted for my readers. I want my readers to like these people, to care about them, and to hope that things are going to end well for them. And there are a number of hurdles that they have to get over in order to get to something like a happy ending. You know, all of the loose threads are not tied up at the end of this book. As I said, it can't end with a happy marriage for them. But I just wanted them to end at a place where the reader felt their lives would proceed in a positive way.
And it gives you this idea that maybe it's inevitable that at some point you'll have to press a reset button on life and kind of start something, at least some aspect of it, anew.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the name Hedges for the male protagonist is not unintentional. You know, he's someone who doesn't commit to things easily. But I think when you get into your 50s, as he is, those choices become a little bit easier. It's kind of like you're not always looking for, like, well, maybe something better is down the road. And in order to establish a home and a base and some sense of family, you just have to make a choice and stick with it.
The relationship between Julie and Mandy is a fairly typical mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
Which is fraught. How did you connect that in the sense of understand? I always say I could live to be 150 and never quite understand the mother-daughter relationship.
Well, I'm glad you think I did understand it. I mean, you know, I had a lot of friends of mine who have children, who have daughters, read it, not a lot, but a few, and say, is there anything in here that feels completely wrong to you or completely off? And I just kind of went, you know, I trusted their judgment on it.
Things like having Julie be a pot smoker, was that intentional? I mean, did you realize what the ramifications of that would be throughout writing the novel?
Yeah, you know, I am probably the most abstemious person I know. You know, I don't drink, I don't smoke pot, et cetera. But I have, for some reason, a lot of friends, I suppose it's my generation, who are pretty much daily pot smokers. And I don't see that reflected in fiction all that often. And I think it's had an impact on their lives. As a friend, it's had an impact on my life. And so I wanted to explore that a little bit in the novel because I do think it's a factor for, you know, people of my age.
It's interesting because even as it becomes legal in many states, there's still an air of wrongness to it.
Yeah, there's an air of wrongness to it, and there's also, for a lot of people like me, an air of there's something kind of, even as it's becoming legalized, it's a little bit subversive, so you don't want to criticize it. It's, you know, kind of anti-establishment, so therefore it's okay. And I'm not judgmental about it, really. It's just a question of exploring it.
But as you say, it obviously affects Julie's life, but it affects David's life as well.
Yeah, and on some level it affects her daughter's life because she's not as present. And she thinks, of course, that she's given up pot, you know, and because she's in her mind, she doesn't smoke pot anymore. She thinks, well, it matters less if she occasionally gets stoned. And that means, you know, weekly or daily in some cases. And one of the challenges for her in the course of the novel is to deal with that honestly.
There is a bicoastal connection here of East Coast, West Coast. The story primarily takes place on the East Coast in a coastal community of Massachusetts.
Right.
Is that a place you're comfortable writing about? A fictional town.
It's a fictional town that's very much modeled on the towns of Rockport and Gloucester. Gloucester is most famous for being the setting for The Perfect Storm.
Right.
And it's a place, I own a small piece of property there. I used to spend a lot of time there. And then, like Julie, I began renting it out short-term through Airbnb. And so it's a place I like very much, so that made it possible for me to satirize it.
Julie has issues with Airbnb. Do you have those same issues?
Yes.
So that comes from an informed place.
It comes from an informed place. No, I'm just fascinated by Airbnb because millions of people are letting complete strangers into their houses, into their personal spaces, into their most intimate spaces, at the same time that people are obsessed with privacy. And I just find that fascinating.
And it almost becomes a metaphor of the novel itself, doesn't it? Of coming into a relationship between a mother and a daughter and David coming in and having this backstory. And yet, how long are you going to be there?
Yeah. And it's one of the great things is that it allows strangers to come into Julie's life and David's life and have an impact on their lives. And in some sense, they, of course, are strangers after 30 years, but they do have a history.
And there are things which I guess is inevitable with any long-term relationship, long-term friendship, where all of a sudden something clicks and you remember something from 22 years ago that you will bring up into the conversation, which is fascinating to explore.
And that's still vital and still alive, and they each still have secrets from each other that have an impact on, you know, the way the story unfolds. But I think, you know, in my observation, there are a lot of people who sometimes they are in marriages or intimate relationships, but still their friendships are of vital importance to them. And I think it's, I wanted to honor the importance of friendships in people's lives in this novel.
And of course, you write about divorce and the effect of divorce. Was that a challenge? Because you are not divorced.
I'm not divorced. I'm also not married. And no, not really, because, you know, pretty much everyone I know is divorced or has been divorced, or so it was easy to find people who were willing to talk about that. So.
And it's the first part of why you're not married, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Heard a lot about this.
Yeah.
In these, you talked about how you would like people to think of David as you, as they leave the novel at the end. But you also talked, it seems like, an affection for these characters.
Yeah.
David and Julie.
Yeah. No, I really had a tremendous affection for them. And one of the things that I have heard most, I suppose, from readers is that they hated to leave these characters behind when they finished the novel. And that, to me, is kind of the highest praise, you know, that I could get. And I felt that way at the end of the novel. You know, usually when I finish a novel, I'm just happy. It's over. I'm done with it and so on. But I actually kind of miss these characters.
They're flawed, but they're really... They're
who isn't?
Who isn't, you know? but you want to be around them, too.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, people are not interesting if they're not flawed. I mean, there's a line in this novel, Julie observes that, you know, usually when everything seems perfectly right about a person, there's usually something significantly wrong. And, you know, I think as the job of the writer is to get behind that wall of defenses, the perfect presentation, and find out what's going on underneath.
There are many lines like that in this novel. Mm-hmm. How long do they take to create? Is it something where it comes out and then you work on it for a while, or?
I think the initial observation about something, you know, like the Romeo and Juliet line or whatever it happens to be,
right,
will come quickly. And then getting the wording down and the timing of it so that it seems both most funny and most truthful can take a little while. 8 years, for example, you know.
Does it bother you that it was 8 years?
Not anymore. I was doing other things. I mean, you know, I
right.
wasn't just,
well, you're,
you know,
teaching.
Or, I'm teaching, yes. and actually in the interim, I published two novels under a pseudonym. That was kind of a job that landed on my doorstep, and I kind of happily took that on. I was working on a play for a while that ultimately didn't go anywhere, but that was kind of a new form of writing that I was exploring and learning about. So
will the next novel come quicker, do you think?
Yes. I hope so.
You wanted
no,
to.
No, I certainly wanted to. And I think as I get older, I'm just less in my own way. I've let go of a lot of my neuroses, not all of them. But so it's a little bit easier. I'm finding writing a little bit easier.
How did you get in your way?
By judging every sentence and by thinking I was a fraud and, you know, I shouldn't be, how dare I write a novel? I mean, this was after, you know, having published 3 and 4 and 5 of them, I would still think that, so.
And after success. I mean, you had success.
And after some success, yeah.
Do you teach it to your students as well?
The self-criticism and self-loathing, do I teach that? Yes.
I mean, to the sense of that you have to get out of your way.
Oh, I try to, yeah. You know, I mean, and I'm always amazed that my students, maybe they were brought up with a little more self-esteem or something than I was. They're able to. Well, you know, I'll give you my shrink's number. You can have a conversation with them. Yeah. I think a lot of my students really do kind of write in a much more effortless way than I do. And I think part of that is being young and not, and there's less at stake, you know, for turning in a story for a class than to a publisher.
Stephen McCauley's new novel is My Ex-Life. It is published by Flatiron Books. Stephen, what a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you for having me on.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Thanks to Argo Studios and Paul Ruest for their production assistance. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.